WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by ZipRecruiter.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Supreme Court lets the Trump administration resume sweeping immigration stops in the Los Angeles area. The order had been issued by a judge who found that roving patrols were conducting indiscriminate stops in and around L.A. California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
How they prevent the use of race to tackle discrimination but allow the use of race to potentially discriminate is disturbing and it is troubling.
The Trump administration says it's launching immigration raids across Chicago called Operation Midway Blitz as the president threatens to also send in the National Guard. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
The president continues to publicly flirt with the idea of sending the National Guard into Chicago, but when pushed, he generally says that he wants the governor of Illinois to invite him in, something that is not going to happen. Governor J.B. Pritzker saying that he doesn't want the National Guard in the Windy City.
Feds say the immigration enforcement effort will target undocumented immigrants with criminal records. A message allegedly written by President Trump to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein on his 50th birthday has been released by Democrats on the House Oversight Committee. Trump has denied writing it. Barry Levine has written about Epstein.
We knew that Donald Trump was friends with Jeffrey Epstein back in 2003. That is well known. He might have written something for this birthday book. It doesn't allege any wrongdoing, but the story blew up because Donald Trump denied it to such a great degree.
President Trump again threatens tougher sanctions on Russia after a large aerial attack by Moscow on Ukraine. CBS's Holly Williams.
Russia launched a swarm of more than 800 drones overnight into Sunday, according to the Ukrainian Air Force. That's the largest drone barrage since this war began back in February 2022. Ukraine says it managed to intercept most of the drones, but close to 60 managed to evade its air defenses.
Paramount, the parent company of CBS News, names an ombudsman.
CBS News has named Kenneth R. Weinstein as its ombudsman to review editorial concerns raised by employees, viewers, and listeners. Weinstein previously served as president and CEO of the Washington, D.C.-based conservative think tank Hudson Institute. Paramount president Jeff Shell says, at a time when trusted media is more important than ever, this new role reinforces our commitment to truth, trust, and accountability. Weinstein was President Trump's nominee in 2017 to serve as U.S. ambassador to Japan and was also chairman of the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Matt Piper, CBS News.
A train collides with a double-decker bus in Atlacomulco, northwest of Mexico City, killing at least 10 people and injuring more than 40. This is CBS News.
Are you looking to hire? ZipRecruiter finds the best candidate for your job fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/...
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Brewers and the Rangers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers and the Lone Star State tonight, opening a three-game series against the Texas Rangers. Milwaukee with a 10-2 win over the Pirates yesterday in Pittsburgh, completing a three-game sweep. Manager Pat Murphy says that 23-year-old Jacob Mizorowski learned a few lessons pitching into the seventh inning.
I can only tell you this is a great learning experience for him, and he answered the bell today and did a very, very nice job.
College football, the Badgers now preparing to play number 19th-ranked Alabama. This Wisconsin beating Middle Tennessee State 42-10 over the weekend. The Packers celebrating a decisive 27-13 win over the Lions. Matt LaFleur grateful to the 77,000 fans who attended, but didn't like there were so many Lions fans in the stands.
The fans that showed up brought great energy, and the fans that sold their tickets to all those Lions fans got to be better.
That's the Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Last week, I said that summer blockbuster season at the theaters was officially over, but it appears that no one told The Conjuring last rites. Prognosticators guesstimated that the film would pull in roughly $80 million worldwide. The film opened in first place this past weekend, surpassing the predicted amount in the U.S. alone with $83 million and pulled in $187 million worldwide. Good for the third largest opening ever domestically or globally for a horror film. For Warner Brothers, this was their eighth number one opening of the year and the seventh film in 2025 that has opened with a take of more than $40 million, something no studio has ever achieved, according to Deadline. Hamilton opened in limited release and came in second place with $10 million, and it was more horror as Warner Brothers' Weapons came in third place and now has raked in $143 million in 5 weeks. Freakier Friday and Caught Stealing finished in fourth and fifth place, respectively. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. After the chilly temperatures as of late, warmer readings are on the way this week. Some showers and storms late tonight and into tomorrow. Low tonight, mid-50s, high in the low 70s tomorrow. Highs climb up into the 80s by the later part of the week. Currently, it's 66.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Tuesday, Dan Schaefer tells us about the latest political headlines from Madison, while Cam Stevenson from Courier Newsroom has the update from D.C.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, hitting the cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we got a Rock'em Sock'em Robot Day today. We have Rachel Dion Thunder on, and we also have our relative and friend, Guadalupe Lopez, who's head of the MMIR office here in Minnesota, on later today. I just want to give a quick shout out to everybody listening to Native Roots Radio. And then we have our friend Rachel Dion Thunder on. Welcome to Native Roots Radio. It's always, always good to see you and getting an update of all the great work you and your organization and just what's happening here in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities. Thank you so much for coming on as always. And good to see you, Rachel.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Robert. Thanks for having me on. Tansay, hello, everybody. My name is Rachel Dion Thunder. I am Plains Cree, Nihiwak, Big Stone Cree Nation Treaty 8. That's way up in northern Alberta, for those of you who don't know. And I live here in South Minneapolis now. Moved here back at the end of 2022 when I met my husband, who's born and raised here in South Minneapolis at Little Earth, Vinny Dion. A lot of you probably know him. But yeah, we all come, you know, me, my husband, our crew, our team, we all come from American Indian Movement. And, you know, a lot of us are second generation American Indian Movement. And then we're all co-founders of the Indigenous Protector Movement, and I now serve as the vice president for that organization. Our office is right here on Franklin Avenue on the American Indian Cultural Corridor here in Minneapolis.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, the people out here, we're really talking to, I want you to know that we're really talking to a doer here, you and your family, you and your husband. Mm-hmm. As long as I've known you I think I corresponded with you about getting a American Indian Movement a medallion years ago before you went on that walk. And so it's really great to see you in community and great to see mm-hmm. all the work that you and your family and also all the Indigenous Protector Movement people are doing, which... You know, the old days of AIM, Clyde would always say, if you think you're AIM, you're AIM. And I believe that's the same thing with Indigenous Protectors Movement.
Yeah, you know, AIM, American Indian Movement, It's not an org. It's not something that you can just decide that you're gonna do, you know, or like show up for. It's really a way of life. It's a way of being. It's a spirit, you know. It's how you choose to live your day-to-day life. It's the choices that you make. It's, you know, what are you going to do to better yourself, better your family, better your people? It's really just doing the right thing. It's what it is, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we had your husband on last week. Everything's kind of melting together here because I just got back from New York and we did the fair.
Ooh,
and I don't know what day it is, so I guess it's Monday.
It's Monday.
Yeah, thank you. And I just got done with a Native American Met Council meeting here and flew back home to the Twin Cities. There's so much culture here that amazes me, and it's in different places. It's hidden right in front of us, and it's amazing. I was down at the Minnesota Arts in downtown St. Paul, and all the Native art that's there just blows my mind. And Dr. Kate Bean is like the curator there or the president, and got to go through their museum, and it was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're really blessed, you know, in the sense of where we live and the community that we live in. You know, there's beautiful communities all across Turtle Island, but I feel that here, like in the so-called United States, that you know, these in the cities, there's really not another city that has the centralized, you know, presence that we have. You know, like all of these organizations that we have Little Earth United Tribes, which is the largest urban Indian housing in the country. You know, I think that just having such a centralized area, geographical area for so many Native people and Indigenous people, it's really beautiful. It's a unique experience to be able to live here. There's truly something going on all the time, something to see, something to do, ceremonies, powwows, art events,
Radio shows and podcasts.
Radio shows and podcasts. Yes.
Well, it's really interesting, too, that a lot of the stuff we talked a little bit in the beginning here about American Indian Movement, you know, a lot of this stuff is because of the American Indian Movement, Native American Community Clinic, Development Institute,
AIOC.
Yes. All those things that were.
Even Little Earth. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And so we owe a lot, and the future looks bright. People like you and your husband, and there's a lot of leaders that have stepped up, and a lot of it, I don't know if we ever had this discussion, but did you go to Standing Rock?
So I was actually in grad school at the time of Standing Rock. So I was getting my master's degree at University of Kentucky, but we did some organizing there. So my little brother went to Standing Rock, and I had friends and other relatives of Standing Rock. And we did organizing like in the cities where I was living, in Lexington and Cincinnati, hosting rallies and gathering donations, and not just monetary donations, but like physical items to bring up there. So that was my involvement with Standing Rock.
Well, the reason why I bring that up is it appears to me, as just an amateur observer, is that a lot of things really happened after Standing Rock. And a lot of people, you know, you talk to the elders like Madonna Thunderhawk, and you know, there was a lull in activism for a while until Standing Rock came up. And now, you know, she once said on my show, we were wondering where everyone was, and then Standing Rock happened, and the momentum has been unbelievable since then, too. And we started this show, Rachel, because of Standing Rock.
Standing Rock was a catalyst. It was maybe like a reawakening of what one would call the Red Power movement, you know?
Yeah.
Not just AIM, but just Indigenous resistance, you know, Native resistance, and really being able to highlight and show how not just effective our people are at organizing, but how powerful our people are. You know, when we stand together, when we unite, especially through ceremony and like our traditions and our beliefs, you know, in a prayerful way. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And Rachel, we got like less than a minute in this segment, and I want to catch up on your organization in the next segment.
Okay.
But I want to just say this, too, that one of my favorite politicians, AOC, went to Standing Rock and was inspired to run for office. And I always want to remember that because that's how powerful things were, as you said.
Yeah, things are powerful. And, you know, and spirit moves and in ways that we don't always understand. And sometimes things happen, you know, and just the ripple effect from one moment in time is can be so powerful, and one fire can might light many, many other fires. And I think Standing Rock is a really powerful example of that.
Absolutely. Hey, we are here with Rachel Dionne Thunder, Indigenous Protector Movement co-founder, and we're going to be talking about what they're doing right now and what they're up to. This has really been a lot of fun already. This is Native Roots Radio, and we'll be right back after this short break. Please stay with us.
On view at Minneapolis Institute of Art, artist Mary Sully was a visionary ahead of her time. Born on Standing Rock Reservation, she worked in near obscurity between the 1920s and 1940s, creating intricate, vividly colored drawings that blend Dakota heritage with modern life. Now on display at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, experience the first solo exhibition featuring Mary Sully's work only at MIA until September 21st, and always free to visit. Learn more at artsmia.org.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACD.org.
Crooners is a classic supper club with a wide range of entertainment. Make your reservations for a parade of international, national, and local artists in the main stage showroom, the intimate Dunsmore Jazz Room, or outdoors at the seasonal Belvedere Under the Stars space. Or enjoy Maggie's Piano Lounge. Enjoy four-star food and drinks with first-class supper club service. What are you waiting for? Go to croonersmn.com for more information and schedule. That's croonersmn.com.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are with our friend Rachel Dionne Thunder, Indigenous Protectors Movement, and we're just kind of catching up, and I really always appreciate the energy that you bring to this show, and I appreciate you being on tonight, as always. Let's get a little update here, what's going on. I know the young ones have a podcast going on. I see the updates there. It looks really exciting. And I know there's things that you do every couple weeks. There's activities that you do. And I'd like to just amplify what's going on with Indigenous Protectors Movement.
Yeah. So I guess I'll just start off by kind of sharing just a little bit about who IPM is. And so we're a Native-led, 100% Native board and staff, you know, Indigenous staff here in South Minneapolis. We were officially founded in 2023, but our mission is, you know, we're here to uplift, empower, and protect Indigenous stories, people, and communities through direct action, advocacy, and community building. And so there's a lot of different things that can fall into those buckets. you know, if we need to, we can go raise hell in the streets. But we're also, you know, effective community builders. And we have a lot of different programs right now that we're running. We've got our Women's Warrior Society, which is every other Tuesday at the Indian Center here in Minneapolis from 5 to 7. We do a lot of different things. We're actually getting ready to go horseback riding here pretty soon. We're going to take all the women horseback riding. And then we also have Mini Shields patrol that we run through the Indigenous Protectors Movement. And so that's the Men's Warrior Society. And they patrol all of the Native organizations here in South Minneapolis Monday through Friday. And they also meet every Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m. at the American Indian Center. And then Robert mentioned, you know, we have a podcast. We just, our interns just started a podcast. It's called Sage in the City. The first episode is live. You can watch it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. And I think the second episode's airing this week is what they told me. So stay tuned for that. But really, Robert, you know, outside of our, what I call our regular programming, you know, we're paying close attention right now to this administration, to the political atmosphere that organizations are having to navigate right now, you know, with in terms of funding. And we're also having to watch closely as activists, you know, with what is going on with like these different federal task force that are now lumping, you know, ICE and kind of like these ambiguous federal agents that will be masked with no badge number or agency number, and how we navigate that in these spaces that we're in. How do we stay informed on what our rights are? How are we effective organizers? How do we organize in a way that is not performative, but actually creates change? Because it, like, let's be real, anybody can go out with a banner and be in the street, right? And that is, and that is great for raising attention to causes. But at a certain point, you have to, you ask yourself, you know, with some of these larger issues, is like, what is, what am I, what I'm doing the most effective? Is there other things that we can be doing? Can we be supporting and uplifting immigrant businesses, right? Can we be pressuring our politicians to create true sanctuary cities or sanctuary businesses? You know, how, what is the policies that we can pressure these cities to change where, you know, like in Minneapolis, for example, like ICE is like, they say that they won't work with ICE, right? Explicitly, which they won't. But if a federal task force comes in here that ICE is a part of, then they, then Minneapolis Police Department will collaborate with ICE. So like, you see how there's like these loopholes where these agencies and policing agencies can infiltrate community. And so these are all very like real conversations being had, right? That we have to be very aware of this climate that we're in, and you know, how do we navigate it, and how do we make sure that we're organizing today, we're organizing tomorrow, but we're also going to still be able to be organizing 3 years from now when this administration is not in a position of power, right? Because this is temporary. And, you know, these are hard conversations to have. One of our staff, right, one of our staff members at Indigenous Protector Movement is currently facing trumped up federal charges from being present on, you know, Lake in Bloomington that day when ICE was here with that federal task force that was issuing a warrant for criminal activity, but ICE used that moment to come into community, right?
Right.
And so she's being made an example of, you know, she's there, they've got these trumped up charges on her saying, you know, to scare everybody else. Like, you know, if this right. is, if you interfere, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely. And so there is like, business as usual, you know, as you could say, Robert, you know, our community building programs and things that run, you know, every day here in community, but there's also this kind of like ambiguous dark time that organizers are existing in right now.
You know, one of the things that I've been bringing up too is how easy this administration has been able to just walk over laws and do things. And then it makes me pause, because one of the things about, you know, we always talk about the left wing and the right wing are from the same bird. How come the Democrats couldn't get us universal health care if this clown can do all these things so easily? So I kind of know what you mean by keeping your eyes open and peeled, because it's really bizarre and shocking at the same time. But as a Native American, we're used to this thing. We are the resistance experts.
Yeah. And, you know, people ask me, they're like, what's your political party? And you don't really want to hear my take on that. I fall more into the category of just anti-government. Mm-hmm. But because of the reasoning is, it is two sides of the same coin. You know, yeah. The reality is that, you know, there's big money, there's big oil, there's big farm that invest money into political campaigns on both sides.
Right.
And to that effect, a lot of our politicians are bought.
Yep.
And, you know, anybody can run, you know, on whatever points they want to run on, but we have to watch what they actually do when they're in office. Right. and pay attention to who's funding their campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's people that have as much influence as our politicians that we will never know their names.
Well,
and so these are just the reality of the government that be.
That's why, for me, Rachel, I was a big Bernie fan in the beginning, and then seeing how Hillary stole that, and the Democrats screwed him over. And, I mean, he's out there still talking about the same things he talked about 40 years ago. And I don't know if that's progressive or if that's the nation's caught up to him, but, you know, a high percentage of the people in this country believe what he says. And so the big disappointment for me, especially with the Democratic Party in the 2016 election, really pissed me off. And and now we have this, though. So I think one of the things for me, Rachel, is I believe we can move the Democratic Party more progressively, but there's no way we can turn the GOP, the Republicans, more progressive.
I don't necessarily think that let's just say democracy is working as democracy should. It doesn't necessarily need to be heavy progressive or heavy Democrat. You know, there should be a balance, because if you truly want a democracy, then it needs to be representative of all types of people that live in that government, if you want a true democracy. Mm-hmm. And then for everything to be decided fairly. But things are not decided fairly. But what you really have to pay attention to is what's happening in your community. Watch what's happening in Washington, D.C. Watch what's happening in Los Angeles. Watch what's happening in Chicago.
Right.
And watch how these states are responding, because the states have more power than you would think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how states like Illinois and California respond to such a strong military presence in their states.
Right. I might have to take a road trip, because Illinois and Chicago's not that far away, and I still have my AIM jackets.
Yep.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. CBS News Brief. A win for the Trump administration as the nation's high court lets it resume sweeping immigration stops in the Los Angeles area. California Attorney General Rob Bonta.
I think the rationale articulated by Justice Kavanaugh is dangerous and wrong.
From L.A. to Chicago, where Operation Midway Blitz, a ramped-up immigration enforcement operation, is set to kick off this week, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Illinois AG Kwame Raoul.
The action that we've pledged to resist is the use of the U.S. military against American cities, which we believe to be unconstitutional and unlawful.
A House panel releases more records from Jeffrey Epstein's estate, including a letter allegedly written by Trump, which he denies writing. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
In late August, the House Oversight Committee subpoenaed some of these records to include the birthday book shared with Jeffrey Epstein. Those subpoenas were provided to the committee, according to Democrats.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's the Brewers and the Rangers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers in the Lone Star State tonight, opening a three-game series against the Texas Rangers. Milwaukee with a 10-2 win over the Pirates yesterday in Pittsburgh, completing a three-game sweep. Manager Pat Murphy says that 23-year-old Jacob Mizorowski learned a few lessons pitching into the seventh inning.
I can only tell you this is a great learning experience for him, and he answered the bell today and did a very, very nice job.
College football, the Badgers now preparing to play number 19th-ranked Alabama. It's Wisconsin beating Middle Tennessee State 42-10 over the weekend. The Packers celebrating a decisive 27-13 win over the Lions. Matt LaFleur grateful to the 77,000 fans who attended, but didn't like there were so many Lions fans in the stands.
The fans that showed up brought great energy, and the fans that sold their tickets to all those Lions fans got to be better.
That's the Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're looking for a documentary that will make your life look pretty boring, check out AKA Charlie Sheen, a new doc that drops on Netflix this week. The Inside Look is a two-parter that explores his three marriages, movie career where his credits include Platoon, Wall Street, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and the hit sitcom Two and a Half Men. The 60-year-old Sheen also talks about his various addictions, mental health breakdown in 2011, where he claims to have had tiger blood, and is firing from Two and a Half Men for drug use. And Sheen is well aware that anytime you self-promote with a new movie or book, you do need spicy new material. So the actor is now saying he has also had sex with lots of men, and it all started when he was smoking crack. I tip my hat to the producers who somehow managed to cram all that into just two parts. AKA Charlie Sheen drops September 10th on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. After the chilly temperatures as of late, warmer readings are on the way this week. Some showers and storms late tonight and into tomorrow. Low tonight, mid-50s, high in the low 70s tomorrow. Highs climb up into the 80s by the later part of the week. Currently at 64 degrees.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5:30, we talk with the indomitable Stacey Abrams about how to build the big tent for Democrats in 2026 to return this country to the hands of working people. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Aho!
Hello, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. Wow, what a great segment with our friend Rachel and Indigenous Peoples Movement. We'd love to have them on. We also have our friend Guadalupe Lopez here, who is the new director. Let me get this right. The new director of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives. Welcome, Guadalupe. Thank you so much for coming on. Long time no see. We had a great time at the fair. Thanks again. I was worried if you would come on or not after our fun time at the fair.
Oh, bonjour, Robert. It's good to be back. Yes, no, it was a day at the fair, and there was a lot of people to see and a lot of crowds to get through, and I didn't need to go back. So good.
As Wendy would say, it was too people-y for her.
It was a lot of peopling. Yep, a lot of peopling.
Hey, so you're the new director, and you've had maybe a little chance to catch your breath. I want to catch up with you and see how you're doing, and what is happening now, and talking a little bit more about the organization that you lead right now.
Sure. So I was able to go to the MIAC meeting a week ago and visit with all the tribal leaders. And I was there to be introduced by the Commissioner Jacobson, who is the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and the tribal liaison, Juliet Rudy, who used to be the prior executive director of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office. So that was really awesome. And I got to see a lot of old people, friends that I've made throughout the years of my advocacy, and then get to meet new people, like the new leaders, and they were doing an honoring for the chair of the MIAC. I believe it was Chair Larson, who was being honored for his dedication doing leading that, being the chair for the MIAC. So it was a really good time, and it was a lot of information, and it was really good to be in those spaces to see what's happening for our people.
Very cool. And you've been in these circles before, because maybe you can talk just a little bit to our listening audience. Just I don't know if we touched base because it was so fun being at the fair, but just your background too. You've been an advocate for many, many years for our sacred women and MMIW, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. And so talk a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I started my advocacy journey in 2025. And it was right after my mother had passed away. And I changed trajectories. When you lose a parent, something shifts in your life, and it just kind of throws you for a different kind of balance. And I didn't expect to get into that work, actually. I was a junior accountant, and I worked at a bank, and I did all of these other things, a teaching assistant. And I just decided to take this position at Women and Nations, which, so I started there as a part-time advocate. And then I moved into the Family Advocacy Program, and then worked at the courthouse for a while, supporting families with orders for protection and harassment orders, and then working with community members. And so that was where I really understood that I really work well with with community members. I identify as a survivor of violence, and so it was a humbling, honorable experience is all I can say. And so from there, I moved to the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition, where I worked for 17 years, doing lots of beautiful work. Got to meet so many amazing people in Indian country all over, from in Alaska all the way to the, lower 48 tribes. And it was amazing.
Yeah. You guys traveled a lot. And what did you do when you put on these? I don't want to say symposiums, but these things that the organization did across the country. What were those called, and What did you guys do?
So at MUSAC?
Yes.
So at MUSAC, we had they would hold for Minnesota, we would have regional coalition meetings and change out in different tribes. When we started to do the work nationally, when we received the TA project, or when they received the TA project, we started to do, they were grantee summits. So Tribal Sexual Assault Service Program was the first technical assistance grant that MUSAC received, and that was working with a very small amount, and now they have grown so big. I'm so proud of them. Nicole Matthews is a great mentor and leader, and all the other staff that have been woven in those within that work are doing amazing work.
Yeah, and that's I talked about this too, how we met before. We were both on St. Paul Public Schools Native American Parent Committee. And then I also had one of your daughters in my class and in my drum line, too, which was just an amazing. She's an amazing person. And I know you're really proud of Angelica, and I am, too.
Yes, I am proud of her. Yeah, I remember she was just that little skinny kid, and she had that quad drum. And she walked all the way, grand old days, from Dale all the way. I think you guys walked to, like, Snelling with that drum.
It was further than that. It was like more like Cleveland.
Right.
I think it was like three miles or 2 miles.
Right, yeah. So you did a phenomenal job with the students, and I know that they really enjoyed being in drumline and having that space to be creative. Still to this day, like I have these, those canisters for like flour and sugar and, you know, coffee or whatever. I have their metal caps, and all of a sudden I came and I just bought them, and then they have a whole bunch of like little dings in them. Here she set them up like little drums, and she was like, I was like, Angelica, I just bought those, and you just dented all my brand new canisters. But yeah, so she still loves drumming.
That's amazing too. I've run across a lot of students that still are drumming for fun or just tapping on cans like that. And it was fun too. It was really fun and a lot of good things. And then we were also, you and I and Martin, we were non-concurrent for St. Paul Public Schools for the first time ever. And that was, and that got St. Paul Public Schools' attention when the Indian Ed program was non-concurrent. And that was fun, and it was also enlightening too.
Right. Being in the spaces with all the community members who were, taking charge and wanted to be a part of that change. That was a really good learning moment for me as well. You know, like I think when you're starting to work with community for community, you have there's a level of humility and humbleness and bravery that you have to have, because a lot of times we don't necessarily go into those spaces because we're scared of not knowing, like, well, I don't know enough, or maybe they don't think I know enough. And so I really appreciated stepping into those spaces and then being welcomed in and being able to ask questions and not feeling some kind of way or being treated some kind of way because I didn't know those answers, because they're not always, they're not always available. And
that's a really good way to put it too. And I was, I was mouthy because I was a tenured teacher. I wasn't hired as an Indian Ed teacher, so they couldn't do anything to me.
That's good.
Yeah, that was good. So I want to catch up too. Now you've had a little time. Let's talk about what you're doing right now. Sure it's intense and in many ways, but also enlightening and also opens, fills your soul too.
It does. I just actually did a NPR interview last Friday, and I didn't expect to be. Well, I know this work is near and dear to my heart. Why? Because it impacts our relatives. It impacts my own family. It impacts the people that I've called family. People that are, you know what I mean. So, it's really important, and I've dedicated my life to gender-based violence and supporting, equity and justice and safety. And so this just felt like a natural step for me to get into. I'm excited that the office is going to be starting a newsletter for community. So I would, when that is ready to be released, I would love for you to possibly do a plug, or I'll do, you know, we can do a plug and have community members being keeping with the updates of the office and what we've been up to and what all the important work.
Yeah.
We're a small office of five, including myself. And so that's pretty tiny for the whole state and 11 tribes. And, but the work that has been pushed out through these dedicated staff members is amazing. And I'm really proud to work here. I've been welcomed in graciously by the MMIR team, but also all of DPS. It's different working from nonprofit to the state. It's, you know, it's different. But I'm excited that we're there, and that the state identifies that how much of how necessary and important that this office can be, along with all of the other people who do this work. And I really want to say that too, because if it wasn't for the organizers in Duluth, in the organizers in the metro, in, you know, up in Bemidji, up in all the way to maybe Mankato and Pipestone, like all of the people doing this work to raise awareness, to seek justice for families, this office wouldn't have existed. And we need everybody to do this work. This isn't just like, oh, there was an office created, it's gonna, you know, it's still, we need, like I said, I believe at the state fair, is that we need all of everybody doing the work. So I think that's, you know, I love when people use their gifts.
Absolutely. Hey, we are here with Guadalupe Lopez, who is now, I have it in my notes, the new director, the Minnesota Department Public Safety Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office. And we're having a great conversation. We're going to be right back after this short break. I'm going to see if I can make Guadalupe cry like she did on NPR. Ho-wa. I guess. We'll be right back.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Four Sisters Farmers Market is more than a place to shop for delicious organic food. It's a celebration of indigenous culture, food sovereignty, and community. Now in its 11th season, the market offers healthy, affordable, culturally appropriate local foods every Thursday from 11 to 3. Located on the American Indian Cultural Corridor off Franklin Avenue, Four Sisters Farmers Market is a project of NACD. Every Thursday now through October, discover more about Four Sisters Farmers Market by visiting NACD.org.
On view at Minneapolis Institute of Art, artist Mary Sully was a visionary ahead of her time. Born on Standing Rock Reservation, she worked in near obscurity between the 1920s and 1940s, creating intricate, vividly colored drawings that blend Dakota heritage with modern life. Now on display at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, experience the first solo exhibition featuring Mary Sully's work, only at MIA until September 21st, and always free to visit. Learn more at artsmia.org.
Hi, Penny here from Nightingale in Minneapolis. Exciting news. During the warmer months, we're extending our charm to the patio. Imagine savoring your favorite dishes outside, surrounded by the lively energy of South Minneapolis near 26th and Lindale. And guess what? Nightingale's patio is not just a dining space. It's also dog-friendly. Craft cocktails, curated wines, and half-priced bottles of wine on Mondays are still part of the deal. Open daily 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. with a full menu until midnight. Join us at Nightingale, where good times and great flavors come together.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Guadalupe Lopez, new director of Minnesota Department of Public Safety, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office. And just so proud. I'm so proud to drive around with my license plate, and it says Land Back on it, and or it just says Land BK, but you know what it means. And people, like, it's important. We talked to State Senator Mary Kunesh, who was a big part of this too, about buying those license plates. And I see a lot of people in my neighborhood that aren't Native that have them too.
It's true. I love to see the solidarity of, you know, investing into those plates go to our reward fund. And so that is something that this office has started, and it just got released right before my hire. And so I know that the current staff worked really hard to make sure that, and DPS worked really hard to make sure that that was a an effort that was made by the office for reward funds for our people who are we're searching for, or finding tips about who were murdered.
It's hard because for me, I see people missing all the time on my feed, and I have to share it. And I can't imagine how your staff feels too, being boots on the ground, which you literally are at times. But the support for the family is very much needed, and it needs to be put out on blast. And I'm glad this your organization's there to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really proud of the team. And so we have an intelligence specialist. We have a the community planner, prevention specialist, and then we have a victim service who works directly with some of the families and or all of the families. And so I know that we're still learning to meld with each other as a new team. Also just, you know, understanding, like, with the contemporary, you know, events of what's happening in our communities, it's not, we're for the whole state. So it's not just only Metro. It's not only just, you know, Northern Minnesota or Southern Minnesota. It's everywhere. And so we really need to be building those community partners with advocacy programs and system-based, working with law enforcement to make sure that we build really great relationships to have that dialogue back and forth so we can assist families and communities the best we can.
Well, I have to believe, because this office is the first one in the country, that you have a lot of other states reaching out to you and wondering how you're doing this. Have you run into that in your early career here?
Yes, we've had our staff meetings. We just had one today where we were talking about how other, you know, indigenous communities, just for instance, Hawaii was talking about what are we doing in Minnesota. I know that North Dakota, I've seen that NPR article about North Dakota having quite a few young relatives in like back to back with missing. However we could support and help, we want to. I know that we, just from getting feedback from my colleagues, one of the things that they had said is that they've been given information from other people of like best practices in their community. And so I think nobody knows exactly the right formula yet, right? Because of we're just looking into it in this different way. And so, we also know, like, what creates the perfect storm of, you know, that has our people going missing and murdered. And so how do we rectify that? And so we're doing our best to try to change change systems and social norms around missing and murdered.
One of the social norms that I heard a few years ago was from our friend State Representative Heather Keeler, and it was an MMIR rally at the Capitol, and I'll never forget this, and how she put this is that she's told her children, her sons in particular, that she would never leave them. So if she's gone, look for me, because I would never leave you. And I think that was the old kind of scenario that the police and people felt was like, oh, they just left for the weekend and they're coming back, you know, and just totally blew off the urgency of possibly what was happening.
Right. So, well, that's a misconception, is that you immediately call. There is no waiting period. If you know that somebody is missing, you can call law enforcement right away to make a report. And so that is something that is really important. I mean, I think I even had that in my head probably a few years ago. It was changed under Brandon's Law. And so that is something that that was changed for communities. And I think that that is, you know, it makes my heart real heavy to have to say that we have to like plan for, but really kind of like, it's scary. I try to, you know, if I didn't have hope that we can make change, I promise you, I couldn't do this work for, you know, 20 plus years. That I do believe, and there has been change, and it's not as fast as we want it to be. And it's really hard when we're working with families, and communities that are so devastated by the loss of their loved ones and their community members, because we're all impacted and we're all intertwined. And that grief doesn't necessarily, you know what I mean? Like, we need a safe places to land that grief. And so what does that look like for our communities as well? And having those dialogues. And we live in a community, in a society where it's like, oh, well, this horrible tragic thing happened to you. Okay. You get like 48 hours to get over it. And then back to work, back to this, back to the grind. And I think that that is something that we have to really pay attention to.
Wow. That's a really good point too. Yeah. And I, you know, without it sounding crass, I always like to see that if they're blonde haired and blue eyed, they're on for months that one person's missing. And I really believe the organizations that you've been involved with, and especially now with this Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office, is that that's not the norm anymore. And things are changing. And so that's one of the big exciting things to have you on the show, is to talk about that, because like, you've been doing this for 20 years and you have seen a lot of change. And I've seen change just in the last 5 or 6 years.
Correct. Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, it just like a segment ago, was around how we need everyone to do this work and in the way that they can. And so, I was visiting with Deanna's Standing Cloud, and I had mentioned to her, I said, you know, we still haven't had all our medicine people be born yet. We still have we have all of these people that haven't came here yet that are going to make change. And so how do we raise our children to remember that they are going to be the next leaders, and make space for their leadership and make space for their voice, and all along with integrating voices of our elders and the ages in between. The moment that we start othering other people is the moment, those are the times that we end up like kind of really losing as community.
Wow. That last statement was very heavy. Guadalupe Lopez, let people know how they can follow you and the website and what's going on here in the great state of Minnesota here.
Right. Well, so you can look at the MMIR office at dps.mn.gov/MMIR. I know it's a long thing. Or you can just Google MMIR Minnesota and it will bring you to the DPS site. So that is a way to look at our website. I know that we're getting ready to start launching newsletters that give you updates of what the office has been up to. And some, I know Anita Lovelace just won People's Choice Award for the beautiful jingle dress. Yes. And so, I mean, we have that, you know, like we want to acknowledge all the things that people are doing on this behalf.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Green Bay's own Frank Hermans. Just a bit outside, director Sean Hannish joins with big news and the Green Bay Film Festival's Nick Watier. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Have you thanked a farmer today? Wisconsin's nearly 59,000 farms contribute over $116 billion annually to our state's economy and over 350,000 jobs. Please join the University of Wisconsin as we host our 12th annual Celebrate Agriculture game on September 20th against Maryland. Sponsored by Cleary Building Corp, Culver's, Case IH, and Compeer Financial. Thank you to our sponsors for making the Celebrate Agriculture game possible.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise. This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The Supreme Court allows immigration stops to resume in Los Angeles for now. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass condemns the actions of the court.
The Supreme Court has now given the green light for law enforcement to profile and detain Angelenos based on their race.
As the Trump administration says it's heading to Chicago this week to ramp up immigration enforcement, residents, activists, and others sound off.
No hate, no fear. Immigrants are welcome here.
The Department of Homeland Security calls the Chicago effort Operation Midway Blitz. Nearly half of people over the age of 15 living with diabetes were undiagnosed in 2023, according to a new study from the Global Burden of Diseases, Injuries, and Risk Factors. Study author Lauren Stafford.
There's another big gap in getting those people that are on treatment, getting them to achieve optimal glycemic levels. Globally, that's around 40%.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.